Hey, first things first here. Happy Friday, Drive Guys. Kevin Whitey Gleason and Kyle Draper, who's getting ready to call the Kings and the Warriors on Sunday night. Second thing, second here, Kyle Draper. Congratulations on the Philadelphia Phillies advancing to the blah, blah, blah National League Championship Series by ousting the 100-win Braves for the second year in a row. Way to go.
Thank you, White. I appreciate it. You know, I know you weren't rooting for my guys, the Phillies. I know you call it a bandbox of a stadium that they play in, but the Phillies are a legit team. I thought last year was sort of a fluke. They got hot at the right time. But this is a good ball club right now, and they face the Diamondbacks, I believe. So a chance to get back to the World Series. So exciting times for us Phillies fans.
You know what I like about the Phillies, and it's not a lot, frankly, but I heard their GM today, or read their GM talking about how he put this team together, and you know, you get really good power pitching, and you get guys that just really are competitors and love to play baseball, and that's one thing you can't take away from them. Those guys, they really are hard-driving competitors who thrive in the October pressure. And I'll tell you another thing, Castellanos, right?
Yes.
Yeah. He's got the prettiest right-handed swing I've ever seen.
You like his swing? Yeah. And
beautiful.
Him and, you know, I would say arguably he defines what Phillies fans want to see from their athletes. Hard-nosed, tough guy.
Yeah.
No-nonsense kind of guy. You know, just, some would call a jerk at times. You know, he plays with an edge, like you said. But he's, you know, what this team is doing, Bryce Harper, you know, maybe arguably can go down as one of the greatest Phillies ever, you know, when you look at these runs that they're on. And so this is just a team of grinders, man. Of they're a tough out. And that's a great place to play. Forget your bandbox, but in terms of atmosphere, it is tough to win in Philadelphia.
I get that. And I got to say, maybe it's because there was so much online. To me, I tried watching some of the football games. Like, the Chiefs, just the way Alan said it today was, I agreed with that. They kind of played with their food a little bit. That game never really grabbed me. But that baseball game, because there was so much on the line and because those Philly fans were so excited, to me, that was a lot more watchable than the football game.
Yeah, it was. And the thing about that series, you know, Braves and Phillies, it got kind of nasty, you know, off the field as well. Yeah. Like, you know, you talk about a rivalry, you talk Kings Warriors, it sort of resembled that to an extent. Like, sure, they're division rivals, I get it, played last year in the playoffs, but it went up a different level. It turned into a real hatred between the two clubs and the fan bases as well this year.
What'd you think of that? Was it Arcia of the Braves said, he said something about Bryce after that incredible double play, walk-off double play in the clubhouse. He said, "Way to go, Bryce," or something like that.
Attaboy, I think he said.
Attaboy. That got back to the Phillies, and I could understand how they'd be upset, and then he stared down. Harper stared him down when he hit the home runs, and they made T-shirts. Mm-hmm. Arcia said, I didn't mean that to get out. It's in the clubhouse. So I'm trying to figure out you said it, so own up to it. That's one thing. But is there anything to that? Look, I'm not taking anything away from the Phillies. And it got out there and they made the most of it. Good for them. But is there something to a guy saying, I said that in the clubhouse. What I say in the clubhouse should stay in the clubhouse.
No, I don't think there's anything to that because, and you've been in locker rooms. Once they open the door and let reporters in, there's no nothing's all, you know, unless
especially
they
now,
say
right?
off the record or something like that.
Today.
Especially today. And so, you know, there's this notion that, you know, the clubhouse is a sacred environment and, you know, everything like that. It is until you invite, you know, the media.
Because the doors are open.
Yeah, the media's job is to report what's heard and what they say in the clubhouse. And so I get it. Arcia wasn't talking directly to the reporter. He's talking to his teammate. But you got to be more aware of that, right?
Yes, like, gotta be smarter.
Once the media is in, zip it up. No more trash talk. No more bulletin board material. So, you know, the Braves getting all upset about that. You know, their fan base getting all upset about that, criticizing the reporter who wrote about it and everything. To me, that's totally off base. Once the media is allowed in, it's on record unless you say we're off record right now.
Speaking of being smarter, Sean Payton.
Oh, my God.
He's having a nightmare season. It continues. You're shaking.
Go ahead. Set it up. It's a dumpster fire. It's a train wreck. Like, you, every week it just gets worse and worse for Sean Payton, I think.
Right. And then last night, late in the first half. They took a sack. There's 20-something seconds left in the half?
Yeah, 22 seconds left. Yep.
Yeah, Russell Wilson takes a sack, and they call a timeout. The Broncos do. Now, it didn't really matter because I think the Chiefs would have anyway.
Right.
But Denver did, and people wondered, why did you do that? And after the game, Peyton had to say, yeah, I lost track of the downs.
Right.
That was on me. I made a dumb mistake.
And it's not a rookie head coach either. This is a veteran, a Super Bowl winning coach. And, you know, this is something Nathaniel Hackett might have not have done last year. Like, Nathaniel Hackett had a better record last year at this time than Sean Payton. And so this is what you call karma is happening to Sean Payton right now. Maybe a great coach. But when he opened up his mouth and criticized Nathaniel Hackett last year, calling it, you know, the worst run operation in the NFL, I mean, that's karma coming back to bite you. And now you're 1-5. I think it's the worst start for the Broncos since 1994, I think I read. And so it's karma coming back to bite him.
Yeah, you know how coaches a lot of times will say, hey, physical errors are going to happen, but you can't make mental mistakes. Yeah. Then you got a coach, supposedly, I mean, presumably a Hall of Fame coach, and he said, yeah, I was boneheaded. I lost track of the downs in this season. Wow, dreadful. You know, in a way, this is going back a ways. What's going on with Sean Payton and the Broncos reminds me a little bit of what happened when Dick Motta came to the Kings. Mm. The Kings were kind of lost in the wilderness, yeah. And they brought in this guy that had won a championship, in 78 with the Washington Bullets. And he came in and he thought, yeah, I'll show you how you run these things. And he got rid of players and he got like just almost an expansion team thinking, I'll fix this whole thing. Of course, he didn't fix the whole thing.
Right.
Because he couldn't fix the whole thing. But I get the same feeling from Sean Payton. Thinks, I'll come in there, I'll fix everything. And surprise, you're not that good.
And what we're seeing now is that if I'm a player in that locker room, how much belief do I have in the head coach,
right?
Sean Payton?
Especially after last night.
Exactly. And so I said this last year about the Sacramento Kings. When Mike Brown took over, sure, they started 0-4, but that 7-game win streak in mid-November, early December, that sort of catapulted their rest of their season. Because now players are looking at, you know, Mike Brown and saying, wow, what he's preaching to us is actually working. And so now Sean Payton's telling his guys, we got to do this, we got to do that. And they're still getting smoked. They're still getting mollywopped. And so to me, as a player, I'm like, does this guy really know what he's talking about? Mm-hmm. You know? And so I don't know how much faith they have in their coach right now. 1-5 after 6 games. Sure, it was a close game last night. But to your point, I don't think anybody ever thought that the Chiefs were really threatened in that game.
Yeah, when Mike Brown came here, as you know better than most, He gets maybe too much credit for this, but he had a ton to do with establishing a culture.
Yeah.
It's not just one guy, but he had a huge role in that. Monty did. The players bought in. So Mike Brown comes in and helps establish a winning culture. Sean Payton has gone to Denver and done the exact opposite.
Right. It's worse than it was a season ago. And now, you know, he came in and talking about Russell Wilson. He shouldn't be kissing babies and all that and, you know, running for office, basically. I'm paraphrasing here. And so I don't know if his quarterback is on the same page. And I've said it. You know this. The head coach quarterback relationship, it almost has to be a marriage, almost has to be a love affair, sort of like we're seeing with the Niners with Shanahan and Brock Purdy. And so if your head coach and your quarterback are not on the same page, there's a little angst between each other. That's what you see what's happening in Denver. It's a dumpster fire right now.
What do you think has happened just to Russell Wilson, the quarterback?
That's a great question, because when I look at his season numbers, 12 touchdowns, only 4 interceptions. It's not like, you know, he's upside down when it comes to that. But his completion percentage is solid. I think he's at like 65% something. But what I saw last night, 95 yards passing, he's not that guy that can carry a team anymore. He needs weapons around him, you know. And so that's what I think is happening. I thought early in the season he looked a little bit like old Russ, you know, little pep in his step. And I don't know whether it's the 70-20 debacle against the Dolphins or what, but he's regressing, it looks like, each week.
I'm wondering here, and we're talking so much about quarterbacks and systems, and we have Mike Sando's going to join us in just about 5 minutes or so here on Sackdown Sports to talk about the Brock Purdy situation. Yeah. But I'm wondering if Russell was really never quite that guy. When he was with Seattle, and he was a fine quarterback, and he deserved all the accolades. But they had obviously a defense that was out of this world, a tremendous running game, and he thrived. And now when he's expected to be, all right, you're going to carry the team. Maybe he was never really that good. I don't know. He's shown flashes of it, but overall, he really misses the Legion of Boom and Marshawn Lynch.
But I will say with Russ, he did keep the Seahawks sort of relevant, though, I thought. You know, he wasn't great or anything, but they didn't completely fall off a cliff, I don't believe. They had some rough years, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, connected on a lot of deep
throws. For a while, he was, you know, the guy that kept them in relevance. And so I always say, too, when you look at it, most of the time, great quarterbacks have great players around them. You know, there's a few instances, you know, you could argue Patrick Mahomes right now, but even in Patrick Mahomes' early years, that first Super Bowl, they were loaded. They had a ton of talent around him. And so you need weapons, a.k.a. Brock Purdy. He needs weapons, and you can't fault him for that. And I'm not going to fault Russell Wilson for the squad he had out there in Seattle. Same way I'm not going to criticize Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia. You need weapons to be successful. It's very rare for a quarterback to not have any receivers, basically, and still be a Super Bowl level team.
I think Brock Purdy's probably the only guy who could thrive under those conditions.
I'm sure.
I don't know for
sure. I don't know if my guy Mike Sando would agree with you on that. And so I can't wait to have him. So we can set this whole Brock Purdy conversation to bed. Send it to bed. It'll be wrapped up after my guy Mike Sando.
Warmed up. Mike Sando from The Athletic explains why Brock Purdy's on track to be actually the next Dak Prescott. That's next year as we continue on this wonderful Friday. Drive, guys. Sacktown Sports. I tell you what, Mike Sando has been coming on our shows for a long time. Great guy, great writer with The Athletic. I almost feel bad bringing him in here because I don't know that he realizes what a landmine he's stepping into. You know, this has been, obviously, as part of the cover.
I can take it.
I know you can, Mike. I just feel like I should give you a heads up. As part of the Cover 7 in The Athletic, Mike Sando writes about quarterbacks every Thursday. By the way, all guests come to you from the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. And yesterday, Mike wrote about Brock Purdy. Mike Sando joins us. How are you, Mike? It's great to talk with you again. Fascinating piece yesterday on Brock Purdy. Have you ever seen a quarterback who's been discussed this way, this deep into his career? There's so many people that love him and so many people that aren't sure about him yet.
Yes, I have. I wrote about the other one. It was the exact same thing with Dak Prescott in 2016. It's exactly the same. I mean, Prescott comes into the Cowboys. They got three all-pro offensive linemen. They got Jason Witten, Dez Bryant, Zeke Elliott's leading the league in rushing. And he comes out gangbusters. He goes 9-1, 17 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. And people are like, oh, this Prescott guy's good. But, man, the 49ers didn't even want him. They tried to draft Paxton Lynch. I mean, can this guy really be this good? How do you know when there's such good players around him? And here we are with Brock Purdy. They didn't really want him, right? They wanted Trey Lance. And yet now he's doing great through 10 games. They're 10-0, 20 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. But, you know, they got that Christian McCaffrey. Kyle Shanahan's an amazing play caller. You got George Kittle. You got Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk. I mean, how much of it really is him? Anyway, what would it look like if he was on a bad team? And, you know, we're 10 games in. It looks pretty good. He's really answered every test there is that he could have. There's nothing really else he could do beyond what he's done, right? He's aced the test. And the question is, when the test gets a little harder, do you keep acing it? And we'll find out.
Mike Sando, I tell you what, man. You must have talked to me last week. Because I've been saying the exact words here every single day on this show. And Niners fans are killing me for it. When you say, you know, he could be like Dak Prescott, because we've sort of seen this before, is that a knock? Like, to me, that's not a knock. Like, 49ers fans want to take it as we're criticizing him. Or I said I need to see more from Brock Purdy. I need when the going gets tough, that's what I want to see. But they're taking it as sort of some sort of criticism or knock.
Yeah, I don't think so. For me, I'm not invested in the team as a fan, so I'm just sort of putting it out there. I did have fun with the idea of the fact that they just knocked the socks off Dallas with Prescott. People are down on Dak. They think he's not good now. And so to have Brock Purdy compared to him does feel like a slight of Brock Purdy. And I knew that going in. That's why I think the first lead of the story was like, forgive the comparison here, because we're not trying to take a shot. It was really I didn't cook this up thinking that I didn't think of Prescott at all. I went and looked statistically. I was just trying to find, hey, who's won about this many games in their first 10? Like, who's just lit it up? And he was the one that came up that was recent. And I thought, geez, I remember that. They were loaded. No one gave Dak any due. And then pretty soon, within 4 or 5 years, he's signing a $40 million deal. So that's a success story. Now, obviously, you know, he's been injured. I think he's not as good as he used to be. And he stagnated a little bit. That doesn't mean that that's what's going to happen to Brock Purdy. We shouldn't say that. I think at the same time, we should take into account that, hey, it's early and it's been sensational. But, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo was 8-2 in his first 10 starts, you know, and passed for more yards with 10 more explosive pass completions, also had more interceptions. it's always a fun
yes
discussion to have. But
I love it, Mike.
You say this about it. Purdy, like, what has Purdy – there's nothing Purdy shown that makes you think he can't be a success long-term.
Right. And just to, you know, clarify – one of the reasons some people think Kyle is hard on Brock Purdy is because 2 weeks ago, Kyle came out and said, I apologize for what I said about Brock Purdy. He's better than I thought. You actually said
no,
that.
No, I did.
Did you not?
I did say it because, Mike, I compared him sort of to Lin Sanity in the NBA, Jeremy Lin. You know, the Knicks fans loved him. He had a good month or two run, and then he came crashing back down to earth. I actually don't think Brock Purdy is Lin Sanity. I think he is a good quarterback. But the fact remains, and reading your article, you know, the quotes you had from several defensive coaches, I want to read this one. This is one that, you know, really stood out to me. One defensive coach said, you will see Purdy. He will crow hop. He will get the ball out there. It's not always pretty, but there are a lot of layups. And that was my point, you know. Because of Kyle Shanahan's system, because of the talent on that team, you know, he hasn't had to, you know, fit it into tight corners as much. He has guys running free out there in that secondary, I feel, a lot.
Yeah, he does. Now, you know, to the counter to that is he's such a quick decision maker and good decision maker that he does throw the ball with anticipation, too. So sometimes, you know, sometimes he's throwing that ball and the guy, the receiver, hasn't even turned around.
Right.
And if you can do that, and if you're seeing everything clearly, you can do that when they're covered too, as long as the defender has their back to you. So I think there's some real encouraging signs along that way. Like, he seems to know what to do. He seems to make the right decision. He may have great choices because there's guys open, but, like, you don't ever really watch him and go, ooh, you're not going, oh, wrong decision.
Right, right.
Now, when we watched Jordan Love or Jimmy Garoppolo in that game the other night, you're like, What was he looking at? I mean, he threw it right to the guy on the other team.
Right.
That just doesn't happen with Brock Purdy. We don't really see that evidence. And so, you know, I think when we do see him trailing or in two-minute situations, heck, he may thrive because he seems to be a cool customer and not be flustered by it, but we still haven't seen it.
So. Yeah, that's where the comparison to Jimmy Garoppolo breaks down. Mike Sando from The Athletic is with us. And Jimmy, yes, he did some wonderful things as a 49er, but he also was prone to those moments in the middle of a game where what was he looking at? And Brock, we haven't seen that from Brock Purdy, at least not yet. But I wanted to ask you, Mike, because I know you're talking all the time to people who evaluate quarterback talent for a living. Are there some talent evaluators who are just never going to see Brock as truly an elite quarterback because he doesn't have an elite arm?
I think there's some of that initially in the evaluation. So, you know, when I do those, the quarterback tiers every year, right? Tier one, tier two, the most of the tier one guys are different physically, right? It's Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow in terms of how he throws the ball, although he's not absolutely just off the charts in terms of physical prowess like some of those guys. But they're guys, if you put together the highlights of their throws, they'd probably be more wow throws than a Brock Purdy, right? Where you'd go, oh my gosh, how did he do that? That being said, for many years, Drew Brees was a tier one quarterback. And Drew Brees was not on the level of – Drew Brees' highlight reel is not the same as Mahomes's or Justin Herbert's, right? Those guys who just, they make a throw that's impossible. Like, no one else can do it. You know, across the field, on a rope, that's probably not going to be Purdy, but it doesn't mean that he can't have success like those guys do. And I think Drew Brees is the example that gets brought up a lot when you have a guy who's maybe not as sensational physically, but makes good decisions quickly, seems to be accurate, seems to process well. And then if you're good in the other areas, like you're just really driven and you really are going to work at it and you have a way with your teammates, those are kind of some boxes that Purdy seems to check, right? He has to prove it over more than 10 games, but I think you got to be pretty optimistic.
Yeah, you're right, Mike. And you know, when I look at your article, one thing you pointed out, which could be true, you know, we're waiting to see Brock Purdy in these difficult situations, having to lead his team down the field in the last 2 minutes, what have you. That might not happen. We may not. He may not even have to do that at all for this team to win the Super Bowl, Mike.
That's true. That's really true. And I went back and looked at the last 10 Super Bowl winners. They actually didn't have a lot of times in the playoffs when they were way, you know, behind late and had to do it. So, you know, I think the key for the 49ers will be, like all of these teams, hey, man, keep your guys healthy, right? Just don't be losing the wrong guys at the wrong time and make it too hard on yourself. If this team goes in to the playoffs like they are right now, I mean, you would like them over where Kansas City is right now, probably, right? I mean, you'd be feeling pretty good about where they're at. So I think it's exciting, actually, kind of fun.
Yeah, it's a great piece in The Athletic. It was yesterday, Mike Sando, as part of the Cover 7. Mike, before we let you go, 49ers look like they're catching a break this week. Looks like they're going to have P.J. Walker under center for the Browns. Do we know what's going on with Deshaun Watson? Is it just a matter of, hey, he's needing a little extra time to recover from this injury?
Yeah.
Or are people there starting to wonder about why he's not playing yet?
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone there in the building or on that team that I know of is worried about that. I think there's been a little bit of, I don't know if their communication's been the smoothest on it, because I think they did think that he might play, but it has to come down to him. He's like not throwing, and then he goes to a workout to throw, and that's the only time you really find out if he can do it. And so I think they've shown in those workouts, like, I think one of them was even on video, a pregame one. It was like there was no way, if you watched him throw, he can't do it. So I don't think there's any – this is one of those situations where he's got nothing to gain by, you know, it's not like he's looking for a new contract or there's anything like that. I think he's been a tough guy, and I think if he could play, he'll play. And it's been kind of a week-to-week deal where he tests it out, and it just doesn't seem like it's ready to go. So, you know, tough for them, because I think if he was playing, it would be a nice little measuring stick for everybody.
Mike Sando, thank you, Mike. Enjoy the games this weekend. We appreciate it. Great stuff as always in The Athletic, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Now, are you feeling better about Brock Purdy now that Mike's kind of educated a little bit? Like, hey, this guy's really good.
No, I feel like what I've been saying all along has been validated by someone objective who's not wearing 49ers colors when they go to bed at night, you know? And so shout out to Mike Sando. He's been back. He said he backed up everything I've been saying.
Uh-huh. Okay. Good. Yeah. Yeah.
Outside of the Eagles, yeah, they are Super Bowl favorites, Jay Johnson in my ear. Niners are suit. Yeah, so what? Right now, week six. But as you know, Jay, you don't win the Super Bowl in October. You don't win the Super Bowl in October. Now, if they go into Philly and win October in December 3rd, week 13, then I'm going to anoint them as the favorites. Right now, come on, man.
Jay says, and I'm sure some Niner fans feel the same way. Other Niner fans feel like I'm letting you off the hook, but I'm just letting it percolate. And, you know, we're keeping receipts. That's all good.
Exactly. Yeah. That's you know what? We could do all this talking right now, Niners fans, Whitey, Jay, whoever, but ultimately it will be decided on the field. And December 3rd is the date. I'm telling you, that game is going to matter for home field advantage. And whoever has home field advantage is going to the Super Bowl between the Niners and the Eagles.
You have moved the goalposts on Brock Purdy a little bit.
Yeah, right? Because more information has come in. I said he's not Jeremy Lin. He's more of an Uber driver, you know, gets you from point A to point B pretty safe. He's that safe Uber driver. You know, he's like the Allstate commercial, you know. That's the guy you want because you're safe when you're with Brock Purdy.
We unfortunately have to take a timeout. Even more unfortunately, we have to talk more about Philly because James Harden spoke to the media today. Hear what he had to say when we come right back on The Drive, guys. We're brought to you this hour by the NorCal Sportsman Show, October 14th and 15th at the grounds in Roseville. I'm Whitey Gleason, Kyle Draper. Get ready to bring us play-by-play Kings and Warriors on Sunday. So I know you were out at practice.
Yeah, I checked out practice today. Got to, you know, see the entire practice from start to finish. And, you know, one thing I could tell when I watched the guys play and I listened to the coaches, They're not happy with the way the preseason has started either. You know, we talked about it yesterday. Is there a cause for concern or anything like that? I don't think so. But it's clear that this team is not clicking the way they want to be. And I saw that a little bit in practice today. They were going hard. You know, there was like a little edge to them to an extent. You know how, you know, when things just aren't, you wake up a little ornery, you know, you're not.
They haven't looked competitive. Right. That's been the thing.
Yeah. They haven't looked great. And so I thought, you know, at practice today, you saw a team that knows that they have some work to do. They need to improve. And they weren't happy with those first two games.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think they need to show against the Warriors? It shouldn't be a problem against the Warriors, right?
Yeah, it shouldn't be, right? You don't need to get up for that. Yeah. You know, you see that uniform, you know, on the floor, that blue and gold, or, you know.
Back home?
Yeah, back home in front of your home fans. And so I want to see them, you know, who knows if Steph and those guys will play, but it shouldn't matter, you know, because it's all about what the Kings do. And, you know, if I'm Mike Brown, I want to see a high level of competition, a compete level. The shots may not always fall. I don't need to see 30 threes go in or 22 threes go in or anything. I don't care about that. I want to see them fight each possession. I want to see them, you know, come out and play hard, you know. And so it'll be interesting to see some of the lineups, you know, with Keegan Murray was out last game. Looks like he's going to play this Sunday. He had the wrap on at practice again, and it's something he may have to play through again with the wrap on. But I want to see the rotations, you know. I want to see the units that Mike Brown, but ultimately I just want to see a team that has a desire to win, a killer instinct, if you will. You know what, you're coming into my building, there's no way you're leaving here with a W. That's what I want to see come Sunday.
We know this team wants to win desperately, but for some reason through two preseason games that hasn't translated onto the floor, and that's nothing to panic about or get overly upset about in the preseason, but still, that's something that should be there. There are certain things that should be there every night. The shooting's not going to be there every night,
right?
But that level of competitiveness, that you would think, no matter what you're playing, the preseason, regular season, that should be there. And frankly, through the first couple of games, it hadn't really been there. So that's something that, hey, that needs to show up Sunday night.
Yeah, and if you want to be a contender, you want to be a great team, you want to be a team that competes for multiple championships, you have to have that inner desire, you know. And I don't want to see this Sacramento Kings team just be happy with last season, still fat and happy off that. We had a great year, 48 wins. It's what have you done for me lately? We've turned the page on that. This is a new year. And so I want to see the same hunger that we saw last season this year with this Kings team.
Didn't you, and I know you spend a lot more time around the team than I do, but didn't you feel on media day you could feel that confidence and that excitement about getting going coming off of the players? And there was, to a man, it was, yeah, we lost last year, we're ready to go. We love being in the playoffs. We want to do that every year.
Yeah, you know, I saw that confidence, but, you know, confidence can be something that, you
almost
know,
like a narcotic. Like,
right,
yeah.
Exactly. You know, it's like, you know, and then you find yourself 20 games in, oh, we're still confident, but then you're 8-12. Like, you know, you got to have confidence and a drive and a desire that goes with it. And that's why the great players are so great. You know, Steph Curry could have been happy with one championship. You know, LeBron could have been happy. Jordan, Kobe, all those guys. But what made them so special is that they came back the next year with that same hunger and same desire. Let's, you know, remember that this Kings team is a young team. They aren't used to winning. And so it's their first taste of winning, first taste of fans, you know, patting them on the back, falling in love. And you got to realize, you know, it's that the honeymoon phase is sort of over. It's like you got to keep, you know, grinding, keep working hard at it. And so that's what I think Mike Brown wants to see from his team.
Yeah, it's one thing to know it. It's another thing to be able to do it.
Yeah, you got
to
actually do it. Yeah.
By the way, the great Jerry Reynolds is going to join us today about 4:30. So we'll get Jerry's thoughts on the preseason so far. I'm guessing Jerry's not too upset about how they played so far.
Nah, right? Hey, Jerry's been around the block a few times. He's, you know, I'll tell you what, though. He will tell us exactly what he's seeing, though.
Yes.
You know, he will, you know, break it down from a coach's eye, if you will, what's happening with this Kings team these first couple of games.
Yeah, so Jerry joins us at 4:30. You know, preseason often is forgettable. I want to ask Jerry about the most unforgettable preseason thing he ever saw, and I'm guessing he may go back to when he saw Pete Maravich and Julius Erving as teammates one preseason.
Ooh.
Yeah, so every so often he dusts that one off.
Okay.
Yeah, one of my favorite Jerry stories. So anyway, we'll see. Jerry can always surprise us with answers. He often does. He joins us at 4:30. Now, today, this is something that could have an impact on the NBA season. James Harden met with the media, made his first public comments in Philadelphia since rejoining the team. So where is this now, Kyle Draper? You're a Philly guy. Everything, they're ready to go? Everybody's back on the same page?
Yes, kumbaya. It's a family affair out there in Philly. Heck no. This is James Harden's first time, talking to the media since saying that he would never play for Daryl Morey again, called him a liar. And, you know, he was asked today, he met with reporters. He said his plan is to play basketball for sure. But then when asked directly whether he thought things could get patched up with Daryl Morey, he said, no, This is not even about this situation. This is in life. So he doesn't trust him. Forget about basketball. He just doesn't trust him as a person anymore. And so I don't know where this will go. You know, James Harden sort of likened it like a marriage. When there's trust lost in a marriage, you can't get that back. You know, it may take years, but you know, James Harden, I don't think he has years. I think he's still ready to leave Philadelphia.
Let's hear from the Beard himself. James Harden today meeting with the media, talking about how, when he was traded to Philly and how he's been treated since.
Just to, the fans, man, it's just appreciate the support and love. And you know, I mean, it's just definitely a difficult time. But for me, it's just trusting, people that you've known over a decade. You know, when I got traded here, my whole thing was I wanted to retire a Sixer. You know what I mean? I wanted to be here and retire a Sixer. And the front office didn't have that in their future plans. You know what I mean? So, it's literally out of my control. It's something that I didn't want to happen in the system being in this position. But, you know, I got to make a decision for, you know, my family. I understand this is a business. You know what I mean? So it's just as simple as that. You know what I mean? I come here today, I work my butt off and do the things necessary as a professional, as I would do and as I've been doing for 15 years.
I don't know. That's a little all over the place.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
He tries to simple. It's as simple as this. Simple as what? What are you? Do you want to be there or not? It's almost like I wanted to be there, but I don't anymore, and that's not my fault.
Yeah.
That's really what he's saying.
Yeah, I wanted to be there, but I think what I heard is that he feels like the organization – didn't want to commit to him. And so one thing that James Harden did, and I think it boils down to his contract situation too. Remember, he took a little less to return to the Sixers before last season, I think it was. And either A, he was expecting a massive contract, max kind of deal that was never offered, or B, he was expecting some sort of trade. So far, neither has happened. And so in his eyes, what it sounds like to me is, you know what? I took this team-friendly deal, you know, because you guys promised me X, Y, and Z, and now you're backing on that promise. You haven't lived up to that promise. And so I wish he would just play basketball, because him and Embiid, they've proven they can be successful. Sure, they've had their shortcomings in the postseason, but, you know, this roster is good enough to compete in that Eastern Conference. And so if I'm Philly, I'm trading him. I think because your priority is Joel Embiid and making sure he's happy. The last thing you would want is James Harden around being a malcontent, costing the team games or what have you. And then Joel Embiid becomes pissed off and says, you know what? I gave it 10 years or whatever. It's time for me to go also. And so, you know, they need to do whatever it takes to placate Joel Embiid and surround him with talent.
More from James Harden. Is there any way the relationship between he and Daryl Morey can be repaired? Here's what the Beard had to say.
I think that you and Harden had a relationship between you. Do you think this is something that can be repaired? I mean,
no.
And why? Why is that?
This is not even about this situation. This is in life. When you lose trust in someone, you know what I mean? It's like a marriage. You lose trust in someone, it's like hot. You know what I mean? So, it's pretty simple.
So where is James Harden going to go? As he says, it's out of his hands. What happens now? What impact is that going to have on the rest of this NBA season? We're right back with that. Drive Guys on Sactown Sports. What is this, Nirvana Friday? Drive Guys? Whitey Gleason, Kyle Draper. Is this your deal, Nirvana? Your big Nirvana
I got a few Nirvana songs here on the phone. Yeah, okay. I like what, Smells Like Teen Spirit. The album, yeah. I like Nirvana. Not wrong with Nirvana.
No. I was just wondering. I think that's right. A couple Nirvana we play. Nirvana's tremendous. Yeah. Your drummer ended up going on doing some pretty cool things. Yeah. What is James Harden going to end up doing, Kyle Draper? He says, I can't, this is not fixable. He still wants out. First of all, you seem to be of the opinion that the Sixers will have to trade him.
I think so. To me, this is sort of like the Dame Lillard situation in Portland. Dame wanted out and wanted to go to Miami. Well, Miami didn't have the best package. So Portland GM Joe Cronin said, you're not going to strong arm us into sending you where you want to go. James Harden wants to go to the Clippers. The Sixers say you need to sweeten that pot. We need more than what you're offering. And so now it's a little cat and mouse game. Who's going to, back down first? Is it going to be James Harden? Is he going to come play and be a good employee, good soldier out there? Or is it going to be the Sixers and they take pennies on a dollar? And so right now it's a game of chicken going on. I do ultimately think that if you're Daryl Morey and you're the Sixers, your goal is to compete for a championship. And so while it may hurt your ego, bruise your ego, you may take less. It might be addition by subtraction by getting rid of the headache that's James Harden. Mm-hmm. And so I think if I'm running things, I'm acquiescing. I'm saying, all right, James, we will look for a trade partner for you. There are a lot of teams out there with great assets. But the problem is James Harden, his value is so low right now. He forced his way out of Houston. He forced his way out of Brooklyn. Now he's looking to force his way out of Philadelphia. And, we had this discussion earlier this offseason. Should the Kings kick the tires? No. You don't want a guy like that coming in and ruining what you have.
No!
Right? And so let's say
you don't even say that, Kyle.
What if you're OKC, Whitey? What if you're OKC? James Harden and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as your backcourt.
No, I'm building something in OKC. I'm building, we talk about a character, a foundation, culture. James Harden, clearly, he's about the culture of James Harden. Bless him. That's fine. Right. We don't need that. Kings don't need that. OKC right. doesn't need that.
Orlando, whatever young team that you're trying to develop, he has to go to somewhere that's ready to win now and has a strong veteran leadership. I look at the Clippers as a logical, it makes sense. I don't see any other team out there that would actually make sense for James Harden other than getting his act together and returning to the Sixers, because it can work if they get over all this emotional stuff that's going on.
Howard Beck, he says that the Clippers have some interest.
Yes.
And he speculated, so this is just his educated opinion. Howard Beck said, three other teams that could be interested could be the Nets, the Bulls, and this one makes me laugh, the Miami Heat. They could get Dame, and could they end up with James Harden, who, again, Heat culture is this way, James Harden.
Right, that's the thing.
It's almost the polar opposite.
Yeah, I think from a basketball standpoint, it intrigues me a little bit, because if you're the Miami Heat, you lose out on James Harden. On Dame Lillard, what's your plan B? Is it just running back? I know you
went
to the finals.
Makes me laugh. It makes
but
a lot of sense.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways.
And so it makes sense from a basketball standpoint, but from a culture standpoint, the thing you hear about Miami is everybody's on the same page. They're a bunch of grinders. They're overachievers, if you will. James Harden historically has underachieved in his career. In the biggest of moments, the playoffs, he sort of turtled. And so I don't know if it would fit. And why would Brooklyn go down that route again? It just has, Chicago's intriguing for this reason. They are a mediocre team.
They're kind of desperate.
They're desperate. They got to shake it up, right? They got to do something. And so if I'm Philly, if I can get a Zach LaVine somehow for James Harden, I would do that in a heartbeat.
The Bulls seem determined to double down on this notion that if we find the right aging superstar, we'll turn the corner that way.
Yeah.
They don't want to commit to a rebuild, so they're staying with this. We'll get another veteran. I could see them doing that too, and I don't think that would work either. I think their coach is not going to last long. And I'm not saying it's his fault.
Ooh, Billy Donovan out there? Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't think it hadn't. Things haven't been coming together there since he's been there. Not his fault, but they got to start somewhere if they're trying to
right.
fix things.
And it's clear because when you look at Chicago, have they really upgraded their roster in the last few? Like, it just seems like every year they're just running it back, running it back. And so to your point, if you're not going to change the players, well, heck, you got to change the coaching staff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe Billy Donovan is somebody to watch if they get off to a slow start. I still don't understand why they are so bad. Like, why aren't they a better team? Because you look at the names, LaVine, DeRozan, Vucevic. Like, that's a pretty good nucleus. But for some reason, the sum of the parts, you know, their total is doesn't equal up to the sum of the parts.
To me, Vucevic and LaVine are great examples of what they are. Those are both pretty good players. But are they really great players?
Right.
LaVine, to me, is better than Vucevic. You look at him, it's like, man, this guy's tremendous.
Puts up numbers.
And it's like, yeah, but his teams don't ever really do anything.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where the Bulls are.
If I'm Philly, I'm making a run at Zach LaVine. I think you got Tyrese Maxey, Zach LaVine, and Joel Embiid. That's a pretty – because then, you know, LaVine becomes arguably your number three, you know, if Maxey keeps trending upward. I mean, that would be a potent squad, I think.
Yeah. See, that's what he is, that they have – the Bulls have a handful of guys, and maybe none of them are true number ones.
Yeah.
DeRozan's close, but then if you have a bunch of number threes, you don't have any number ones, right. You end up being, okay. I think I know the answer to this question. If James Harden really is feeling like, hey, they promised me something. If I did this, they promised me that, but they didn't deliver. Why doesn't he just come out and say that? I think it's because you're not allowed to
make those kind of promises, right?
Yeah,
those kind of side deals.
He's not allowed to agree
right,
to that.
Exactly. Yeah, I think because then it gets into that slippery slope. Like, you know, you got side deals left and right going on. And so that seems to be what's happening, but nobody can come out and actually say it.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break when we come right back. Back to the 49ers. Two big reasons the Cleveland Browns, believe it or not, say they're ready for the 49ers. Drive, guys, on a Friday. Sacktown Sports.